Welcome to the second day of Rohatsu Sesshin, celebrating the Buddha's great awakening. The Buddha Big Bang that gave rise to the universe of Zen. I heard a story that the ancient Chinese statesman and poet Wang Wei said that when the nation is in turmoil and unrest, that's a time to go into seclusion and retreat. And when the way is flourishing and the government's in harmony, that's the time to serve the government. It's a little bit surprising. We might think the opposite sometimes, right? And I don't know exactly what he meant, but he was a devoted lay Zen practitioner who, though very devoted to practicing and going into retreat and meeting with many Zen teachers, he continued to serve in his government post throughout his life. And maybe what he was pointing to is with his bodhisattva vows is that when things are in more turmoil, we need more presence and stability and calmness to respond appropriately. At any rate, our country and world are in a little bit of turmoil, maybe these days, maybe they have been for a while, and we have a chance to go into seclusion this week, be in a kind of mode of retreat, and find our stable foundation with which we can then leave this retreat and serve the world. Since we're on this retreat, I think it may be helpful to not dwell too much on the outer workings of the world, because we do that a lot anyway, but to actually deeply explore the inner world of Zazen, to clarify and actualize our deepest intentions. So, in our lineage tradition, it could be said that the most direct and straightforward and important, renowned and celebrated teaching of Zazen is Dogen Zenji's Fukan Zazengi. A case could be made for other teachings too, like the Jijyu Zamai. But I think really since the time of Dogen, the Fukan Zazengi, the universal recommendation for the manners or ceremony of sitting Zen has been celebrated as the summary of Dogen's teaching, particularly about Zazen. And I don't recall in this temple ever going through this treatise of Dogen thoroughly before. So now is our chance. The Fukan Zazengi, the universally recommended instructions or ceremony for sitting meditation, sitting non-meditation, sitting Zen. And it begins, the way is originally perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent upon practice and realization? And yesterday I proposed that that's basically the heart of the whole teaching of Zazen from Dogen. And I imagine that we all know this to some extent. And that's why we're here, especially in a sesshin. We might feel that that's somewhat an abstract idea, that the way is originally perfect and all-pervading. Or another translation says, primordial awareness is in essence perfect and pervades everywhere. How could it be dependent upon what anyone does to practice or realize it? So even if it sounds abstract or feel like, I don't know if I could say that I have directly tasted this truth, still I propose that we know this on some level. That's why we're drawn to Zen. And yet our experience in Sesshin may feel quite different than this description. I notice myself as the on the second day of sitting, that this mind loves to engage in objects of experience, especially thought objects. It really loves those ones, especially objects, thought objects about the past and the future. They're so much more interesting, seemingly, than those of the present. Because the present, you know, seems to be pretty much the same for 7 days here. But the past and the future, there's lots of variety. It seems more interesting. And I think the mind, maybe part of why it does this is I think it's kind of hardwired to always seek the most pleasant experience. I think we're basically set up that way. It's unavoidable. So it's very humbling to see how, as a long-term Zen practitioner, this mind is still not so trained to remember the reality that the most pleasant experience is always the present. even if it's like painful or something, I propose that on a deeper level, the most pleasant and joyful and peaceful reality of ease and joy is always what's happening right now. And the more I sit, the more that starts to percolate into my experience. Even if I'm remembering a past blissful moment, it still feels a little bit off. It's not quite satisfying because it's divided. It's something else. It's contrived. It's an imagination of some other time and place. And so I think I'm appreciating, as Zazen goes along, that this little voice is saying, do you really think that this thought of past or future is more enjoyable than the plain simplicity of the present? That little voice is asking me this question. And I'm saying, maybe, let's keep trying a little bit longer. But a deeper answer is saying, no, I know, I hear you. I can't argue that one. I'm going to try arguing a little bit longer. Because, after all, I have 7 days to be present. So I can spend maybe 6 thinking about the past and the future. That's my arguing voice. Now if you're not sitting a full 7 days and you're sitting one period or one day, you have a great blessing because you can't use that line of reasoning anymore. Time is precious. So those of us sitting the whole sesshin, I know this habit from many past sesshins. It's like there's a long time to settle into this, so don't push it. But in fact, that deeper voice is saying, yeah, don't push anything. And yet, Kokyo, you're basically wasting your life as you choose the fantasies of the future and the dreams of the past to engage in. In Zazen, sesshin is so good for just gently or strongly prodding us. Like, you know, it doesn't come from outside, really, right? Just the conditions of sitting and sitting and sitting and sitting. Make it unavoidable to face ourselves. Although we can put up a good fight. So, can we hear Dogen's nectar-like words and really drink them in? The way is originally perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent upon practice and realization? I'd say, yeah, sounds good, but Dogen's a kind of fanatic. I got my problems here to work out. This is our great ancestor, and his renowned treatise on how to practice Zazen, which is all we're doing these days. So I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. And then we hear, and we might be able to resonate with this more, after Dogen's exuberant expression of the originally perfect, all-pervading way. He says, and yet if there's the slightest discrepancy, the way is as distant as heaven from earth. If the least like or dislike arises, the mind is lost in confusion. Now you're talking, Dogen. I'm on board with that. So it's these two sides, right? There's the reality that we know is true on some level, and then this stark aspect of the reality of the least like or dislike arising, and the mind is lost in confusion and discontent. And then we have a kind of maybe in-between statement, Dogen goes on to say, suppose one gains pride of understanding and inflates one's own enlightenment, glimpsing the wisdom that runs through all things, attaining the way and clarifying the mind, raising an aspiration to escalade the very sky. So that sounds pretty good, right? But then he kind of critiques this and says, one is making the initial partial excursions about the frontiers, but is still somewhat deficient in the vital way of total emancipation. Now we're into like Dogen's kind of high standard admonitions, right? It's like we might feel like we get to the point where we're actually not totally lost in distraction. We actually have a little glimpse, have a little taste of the originally perfect, all-pervading way, presence, with nothing lacking, nothing extra. And then we might have pride in this understanding, inflating our own enlightenment, our own satori, glimpsing the wisdom that runs through all things, attaining the way and clarifying the mind, raising an aspiration to go further and further. Sounds great, and yet what is Dogen pointing to about this? All of this is making the initial partial excursions about the frontiers. The frontiers is like the it sounds like the kind of edges of the horizon of our experience, but we haven't yet filled the whole ocean past the horizon. We might be still somewhat deficient in the vital way of total emancipation. So we could hear this as, we might get a sweet glimpse now and then, especially in Sesshin. We might truly see the bright, empty clarity of the cloudless blue sky, but we're maybe looking at it through a tube, right? We really do see the sky, but we only see the circle of it through a tube. So the initial partial excursions about the frontiers, but what about taking away the tube and having that same blue sky being not just a circle, but all pervading our entire life? So the possibilities are endless. I think Dogen is saying that let's not sell ourselves short. Let's not, as the Buddha says in the sutras, one of the blockages to awakening is being content with little. Now, sometimes we say, that's also one of the awakenings of great beings, being content with little, right? So I think that the Buddha's saying around, our mundane pleasures, it's good to be content with little. like not try to get more from this world, but concerning awakening, it's not so good to be content with little, because we can feel like, I basically got it. It's just about, you know, being here, right? What's that? Be here now. There's nothing much to this Zen. So maybe if we're in Sesshin, we're already not content with too little. The ones who never come to Sesshin maybe are the ones who are actually content with little. The Zen thing is so simple, and like, if I just, you know, sit once in a while, maybe not even, because it's, the way is perfect and all pervading, actually, why make such a great effort? But this is not something for ourselves, right? It's not like, be content with little because I need to get the big fullness of it. It's more like, the world needs us to do this, to keep going beyond Buddha, for the benefit of all beings, always for the benefit of all beings. And the irony of that is that if we're trying to get it for ourselves, I think we actually will be more easily content with little. We'll be able to stop short. Feel like, well, I got enough. I have enough peace here. But if we feel like I need to develop even more clarity and understanding and skillful means and the compassion that flow forth from this clarity and understanding for the benefit of all beings, to help everyone find this peace, then there's basically no end. Then we really can't be content with little, because until everybody is completely at peace.
It wasn't clear what his critique was of that. Is it because he wanted more? The person in the dialogue says he has aspiration for greater. Maybe because he was being greedy or something about being enlightened, and that's why he's dancing on the doorstep. I don't know. You know,
It's funny.
It's clear what he's been.
The aspiration part in particular, right? Maybe it's like still an aspiration with an idea that I will escalate the very sky, an escalator to heaven. So of course we need aspiration like bodhicitta for the benefit of all beings. But in this case, it is interesting. I think it is a subtle point that is being critiqued here, and I think maybe it's we might say gaining idea, that kind of aspiration. Let's see, this translation says, just suppose you become puffed up about your understanding and inflate your little experiences. You think you have seen the truth, attained the way, recognized the luminosity of mind, and can grasp at heaven. You might think that these initial jaunts about the borders are entering the realm of enlightenment, but you've lost the way of complete liberation. That's nice, because it doesn't actually say aspiration in that one. Initial jaunts about the borders. Yeah. Yeah. The edges. Here's another. Though you are proud of your understanding and replete with insight, getting hold of the wisdom that knows at a glance, though you attain the way and clarify the mind, giving rise to the spirit that assaults the heavens, you may be loitering in the precincts of the entrance, and still lack something of the vital path of liberation. Loitering in the precincts of the kind of gateway.
Like what you're saying about, you know, don't be satisfied with little.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're conceited and you're satisfied with little.
Yeah.
Those go together?
I think so. And I think this, you know, seeing the sky through the tube might be a nice thing, because like, I really got it. And I think if we really do see the sky through the tube, it's something to wonderfully celebrate. It's not a small matter. And then you know what the sky looks like now. You know what Buddha's mind is, even though you're seeing it through a bordered tube. So there's still some borders around this. So it's wonderful. And how do we dissolve the tube completely? And there's many Zen presentations of this, like the 10 ox herding pictures is a great example of, I can't remember how they all go, but it's like, you know, seeing the footprints of the ox. The ox is the original, the perfect, all-pervading way, right? The ox is primordial awareness. You see the footprints of it, like you hear the statements about it, and then you, oh, I'm going to follow those footprints. Those are enticing footprints. And you follow and follow, and then you catch a glimpse of like the tail of the ox, right? And, there really is an all-pervading way that leaves these footprints on the paper. And then you glimpse the ox itself, but it quickly runs. And then you catch the ox. But then you have to like get on the ox and ride the ox, right? And then you become the ox. And then the ox disappears. And then finally you enter the market with gift-bestowing hands. Something like that. So that's a kind of gradual Zen model. So then Dogen reminds us that this is not like, even though it's the southern school, this maybe takes a long time. He says, need I mention the Buddha in Jetavana, the Buddha of Jetavana Grove in India, who is possessed of inborn knowledge? The influence of his 6 years of upright sitting is noticeable still. Or Bodhidharma, literally it says Shaolin's transmission of the mind seal, the fame of his 9 years of facing a wall is celebrated to this day. Since this was the case with the saints of old, how can we today dispense with negotiation of the way or wholehearted practice of the way? It's nice to remember our great founding ancestors who were not content with little. Shakyamuni Buddha is like our, you know, great example of not content with little, right? He mastered the meditation practices that were known in his day in the ancient land of India, where it was like a meditation culture, right? It was like yogis everywhere developing mind and cultivating these deep states of formlessness. And Shakyamuni Buddha was like a natural adept. And I think you probably all have heard the stories, right? He practiced with these teachers who taught him these concentrations. And he mastered them, and they said, you join us and lead the community with us, because you have realized what we've realized. And Gotama was not content to do that. He could have had a nice, comfy setup in the Dharma community, teaching and practicing and being supported. with the fame and prestige that comes with being one of the best in India. And he was like, no, I don't think this is quite it yet. And I've been to all the teachers that I could find, and I think now I have to actually, they helped me a lot, and I'm grateful for their help, and now I have to go beyond, I have to go further, I have to discover the unborn, the deathless myself, and I will not rise from my seat until I do. Dogen says, you should therefore cease from practice based on intellectual understanding, pursuing words and following after speech, and learn the backward step that turns your light inwardly to illuminate yourself. So, of course, he's writing these words probably for someone to read. So it's not a matter of completely putting aside all words and we might say intellectual understanding. Zen, I think of all Buddhist traditions and all spiritual traditions I know of, is the most kind of like anti-intellectual, I would say. Yeah, or at least has that streak running through it of like, it emphasizes the danger of words and conceptual ideas, and emphasizes the wonder of direct, non-conceptual experience. And yet, in the Chinese canon of all the different Buddhist schools in India and China, all the written teachings, interestingly, the Chan and Zen school is the longest section of the Buddhist canon. they used a lot of words to say don't get involved in words. And Dogen himself, who's writing this, right, wrote a 1,000-page Shobogenzo to help us. Not just for his own fun, I don't think. I think he offered it. But at the time of Zazen, we could say, now we have these pointers and teachings, and then in Zazen we can have this really direct, simple, but challenging practice of learning the backward step that turns the light around and shines it back. Ekko Hensho, turning the light and shining back, is a phrase that was already popular in the Zen world of Dogen's time. A beautiful expression of the heart of practice that Dogen's bringing up here. Primordial awareness, the all-pervading way, is sometimes expressed as light. Light can't be seen and can't be grasped, and yet it illuminates the entire world. Light makes the whole world possible to experience, but it itself is formless and colorless, right? So awareness is like light, and it's a poetic image for the light of awareness is usually directed outward, which I've been humbly tasting today. My conscious awareness engaging in these outer objects. And I'm calling like dreams and fantasies of past and future thinking, I'm calling that outer. Those are objects of this light. And bodily sensations, also we might say, well, that's just me, but still, I think from the point of view of this light, those are objects of awareness. They're experiences a thought is an experience, and a body sensation is an experience, but there's the experiencing of them. That's like the light is the experiencing, but we're more into the experiences, the sensations, the thoughts. Can we turn the light around and shine it back on the experiencing? Just be experiencing. The objects, of course, are still there, but we're attending not to the experiences, called objects, but the experiencing is like ungraspable light. And it may be frustrating when we're used to getting a hold of objects, because experiencing is not an object. It's like who we are, it's what's happening, it's ungraspable presence. And Dogen calls this the backward step. Usually our steps go forward to out to objects, and this is stepping back to the source of awareness. And Carl Bielefeld has this great book, Dogen's Manuals of Zen Meditation. It's like super thorough study of every aspect of this Fukan Zazengi and other Dogen Zazen manuals. And he, you know, compares all these versions of, like, as I mentioned yesterday, Dogen's slightly plagiarizing, and that half of the Fukan Zazengi is just like verbatim out of this other Chinese Zen instruction text, but then he changes it around and adds his own flavor. As I mentioned, it's the first thing he wrote when he came back from China in 1227, when he was 27. But then, many years later, after writing many chapters of the Shobogenzo, he revised the Fukan Zazengi, like, maybe 15 years later. And so Carl Bielefeld has the original Chinese one, the early Dogen one, and the revised Dogen one, and other Shobogenzo, Zazengi, and so on, and kind of side by side comparisons. So you can really see how Dogen's mind worked over time. And how, I think we could even say, how Dogen's understanding changed after he received the Buddha mind seal from his teacher and his life's work was done, which I think is, again, a beautiful example of evolving understanding. And I think this is true of my teacher and the 20 years I practiced with him. I thought his understanding was amazing to begin with, but I watched it evolve over those decades and not radically change, but, you know, nuance it. The more we get into it, the finer nuances become more important. So all this is to say that in the earlier, one little change Dogen made, in the earlier Fukan Zazengi, he said, take the backward step that turns the light around and shines it back. And then later he revises it to say, learn the backward step that turns the light around and shines it back. And I might say, that's just a minor detail. It is. But I think it's a beautiful one, and that may be that in those 15 years of Dogen's practice, of basically telling people to take this backward step, seems so simple, but actually, maybe what he found is, actually, this is quite hard for people to do. It's simple, but it's so subtle. We're trying to be in accord with objectless presence. It's not so easy. So instead of just, come on, take the backward step, let's just learn. Start learning this backward step. It's like a process. It's maybe a gradual thing. Let's learn it, or you could even translate it, study it. But experientially, study and learn it. Get used to it. And I would say that's and my own experience, I think it's been decades since I first heard this teaching and tried to get at what this turning the light around is about and having some sense of it. And still, it's one of my favorite teachings, to be honest. Ekko Henjo. And yet my actual understanding of it, I feel like, continues to evolve. And understanding of it, but maybe even more actual practice of it. The understanding's maybe not that different, but how to learn this backward step is challenging, I think. And I keep finding new ways and offering them to you. And I think sometimes I might be like, this one really doesn't work for me. Because I think we all have different things that strike us at different times. One that I bet everybody here has heard already too much is, what is it?
Something about awareness.
Yeah, you know, what about awareness?
Am I aware?
Exactly! How did you know? Am I aware? Or is awareness present right now? I feel like, for me, that's a practice to ask this, and I have total trust that is the practice of Ekko Henjo, turning the light around and shining back. Nothing, not even something like it. My understanding is asking that question sincerely and experientially is, like, for me, the latest method, the latest trick that actually I feel like works. Because I feel like the beauty of that one is it's very simple, and it gives you the answer, so it saves some time. Like the classic Zen method of this, many, many ways of expressing this turning the light around, but the classic Zen ones are usually asking a question like, who is it that is experiencing knee pain right now? Or who is thinking the thought about last week's event? Without thinking good or bad, what is your original face before your parents were born? These who and what questions are like the more classic Zen thing, and I think that they're great. I think they also work too, but the maybe pitfall in those questions is we start speculating, we're looking for an answer, whereas this one that Rachel just mentioned, is awareness present right now? It gives the answer to begin with. It's not like because we're going to discover this special answer. The answer is awareness. Don't tell anybody this who's looking for their original face before their parents were born. Because they can find it on their own, right? But that's the if you go to the answer book on page 53, that's the answer. Primordial awareness. The unborn, undying awareness. Buddha nature, our true nature. We already kind of know that, I think, as Zen people. So let's just, okay, we got the answer, but like, now let's check it out. Is awareness present now? Yes, it is. How do I know? The follow-up question, I feel like, the light's already turned back, but now the light that's turned back focuses back even more kind of like clearly with the second question. I don't know if you have can feel a sense of that. Is awareness present? In order to answer the question, we have to look back, not forward, right? Is awareness present? Yes. Then it still might be sort of hazy, blurry. Yeah, but what? Awareness? Well, how do I know awareness is present? Do I know? Yeah, I know. How do I really know? And it kind of like, it congeals the light. It focuses the light. It develops a trust and a confidence in the light, because we do know, but how do we know that we're aware? It's like a deeper looking back. How do we know that we're aware? Awareness knows it's aware. Nobody else, no extra little watcher over here confirming, because if there were a little part of the mind that's like, oh, I'm the one over here now looking back at awareness and I know that I'm aware, then we've just made awareness into an object. It's an idea, it's just become an idea or something. So truly awareness is only known to be aware by itself. Therefore it's sometimes called self-awareness. It's illuminating itself. The light is illuminating itself, and the light is illuminating everything else. Like the center of the sun is illuminated by itself, and then the sun illuminates the whole world also. And usually we're just into paying attention to the whole world that's illuminated. So now we're looking at the illuminator, at the sunlight, and we can start to explore how it's illuminating itself. Again, it may sound abstract, but we have some zazen time today to explore how the light is illuminating itself. So, Togen says, learn, putting aside all these words and speech, once we got the basic gist through speech, then we put it aside and learn the backward step that turns the light around and shines it back. Here it says, illuminate yourself. The Chinese text actually just says, turn the light and shines it back. But I think that is, if we say capital S self, your true nature, that's what you are illuminating. Body and mind of themselves will drop away and your original face will be manifest. So that's Dogen's classic. That was Dogen's awakening when he heard the words from his teacher during Zazen. His teacher said, drop off body and mind. And through those words, Dogen's body and mind dropped off. He was open to the turning words. And this is now a beautiful expression of how body and mind drop off, right? Body and mind are the world illuminated by this light. So when we turn the light around and shine it back on the source, it's body and mind as separate, solid, existent things drop away. It's not like experience drops away. It's more that we might even say that body and mind drop into the light. That's where they drop. Our experience of body and here mind, I think we can mean like more like dualistic mind, thinking mind, and gross experience of body. This body and mind drop into the ocean of light. And now they're not body and mind, they're light. But of course, they still appear like body and mind, but they're actually light. And it's not something that we do. As soon as we turn the light around and shine it back, body and mind of themselves will drop away and your original face will be manifest. Another name for primordial awareness. If you want to attain suchness, you should practice suchness without delay. And this comes from this story of a Yunju, disciple of Dongshan, who had this saying. He was talking about Zazen, actually. He was talking about to be in accord with the mind of the Buddhas, you must have a mind like a fan in winter. Something like this, I can't quite remember. A mind like an incense burner covered with spider webs in an empty abandoned shrine, like a piece of floating white silk. He used images like this, and he got people like, ooh, I want to be that serene and free. And then he said, if you want such a thing, you must be such a person. And then he said, since you are such a person, why worry about such a thing? That's a nice story that you can read. Dogen's commentary in Shobogenzo, Imo. Imo means such or suchness. And that's the characters here. I think Dogen's playing with that story. So he's saying, if you want, and it actually, the Chinese actually directly quotes that koan. It literally says, if you want such a thing, but instead of saying, you must be such a person, Dogen says, if you want such a thing, you should practice such a thing immediately. It's a more literal translation. This is the beauty of Dogen when you start to unpack the references. Dogen's constantly quoting all these other Zen stories and just weaving them in and changing them. And I think probably half of it, most of it maybe was lost on his audience at the time. But I feel like it's the genius of Dogen that he pulls out just the right phrase from the classic Zen stories to illuminate his point. So if you want such a thing, and such in English is the same as in Chinese, it means things such as this. But it also is this Buddhist technical term, suchness, ta-ta-ta. So here the translator chose the more like the Buddhist term, suchness. If you want to attain suchness, you should practice suchness without delay. And how would we do such a thing without delay? Today? Would you say? Any recommendations? Universal recommendations for the manners of Zazen after hearing this, all of this?
First you have to find a quiet place.
Oh, yeah. We haven't even gotten there yet. Yeah. As we go through these instructions, it's interesting that Dogen will soon start getting very practical about posture and breathing and all. But I find it interesting and lovely that he starts not with the practical, but he starts with the view. Right view is the first of the Noble Eightfold Path, right? He starts with, first let's remember that the way is basically originally perfect and all-pervading. And then, regardless of posture and breath, turn the light around and shine it back at the source, and your original face will manifest and body and mind drop away. First, let's get on board with this. And then we might say, but what do we actually do? as Patrick says, well, if we want the kind of conventional practical methods, then we find a quiet room and breathe and sit upright. And we'll explore all that too. Turning the light around, shining back at the source. And I would also propose that turning the light around is not something also that we do exactly. It's like our awareness is directed outwards, so it's kind of like we might think, okay, so start bending it, bend it, bend the awareness back, or just like, or take, here's the awareness, pick it up and turn it around this way. It's not like that. It's a poetic way of speaking, but it is, I think it's a nice phrase for pointing towards a kind of a non-practice of settling back. I have one Zen friend that says this is her favorite Zen practice, and when she hears that phrase, she thinks of this old TV commercial for Nest Tea. And I remember this from TV. I don't know what years these were, but this thing about the Nest Tea plunge. Has anyone ever seen these commercials? Yeah, you take the Nest Tea plunge, and they show a person standing on a cliff, and they fall back into a river, you know, and splash. So I think that is a nice image. The modern revision of the Fukan Zazengi would say, learn the backward step of taking the Nest Tea plunge. The feeling is like falling back into the source, as opposed to leaning forward into the object. We gather up all the merit and positive intentions that we've accumulated here, and radiate it out to all beings everywhere in the form of bright, loving light. May all beings receive this light and awaken to their true being. The beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.